Hello and welcome back to the iFox with Juice podcast. I am your host, Juice, and I'm here with my co-host, Rena Parsegan. Doing things a little bit different tonight since the holidays are coming up, end of year. We figured we'd do a best of episode. So this one might go a little bit longer than normal, but buckle in because it's going to be a fun ride. So without further ado, here's my co-host, Rena. Rena, how are you doing?
I'm good. What's up?
Pretty good. So we're going to do a quick little rundown of the last UFC on Fox card, the Milwaukee Kevin Lee versus Quinta rematch. So we had a few picks there. So we went 2-2 that night since Rena and I had the exact same picks. So the two we got right were the first two fights on the main card. Yeah. Oliveira did get the quick sub over Miller. So we basically called that one to a T. Font decisioned Pettis. Pretty entertaining fight, actually, but he put a clinic on that kid. Actually, Pettis, I'm not sure what's going to happen with him right now because he did not look very good in that fight. And I'm still of the opinion that he's better served at flyweight, but who knows if that's even an option since they might shut it down. And the two we got wrong, Hooker, man, we were really wrong on that one because that boy took a beating of epic proportions. That was a kind of hard to watch, but yeah, props to Barboza on that one. He really took that boy to the woodshed. And then main event, Aya Quinta versus Lee, got that one wrong. I don't know if some of you saw, I tweeted, and I was quite drunk on the weekend, so it was still celebrating my birthday, so I caught most of the fight. I did miss the first round when I first saw it, and I did think Lee won, but I rewatched it a little while ago, and I have no issues now with Aya Quinta getting the decision. So the pick was wrong there, and it was justified because I do think that Aya Quinta won in the end. But that was our picks. We went 2-2 on the winning track now, but still almost 500 that we're at. But and we don't have any real fights this week aside from there is a PBC card on Fox. The Charlo brothers are fighting. I don't know who they're fighting, but the Charlo brothers, if you guys haven't seen them, you should check them out. They're very entertaining, hard hitting dudes, and I believe they're in the middleweight division, so up there with Canelo and Triple G and those guys. So could be a fun card, you know, get that in while you can before family comes over and you gotta host or do your entertaining and can't just hole yourself up in your room. So we get that little bit of entertainment, but we're gonna start going straight into the best of 2018 stuff. So we have, like I said earlier, we have quite a bit to talk about. I didn't want to go with the typical best fighter, best sub, best KO. We are going to talk about those things, but I decided to add a few little unique topics. We're going to talk about things like best debut, best prospect of the year, best performance of the year, quite a number of topics. So we're just going to go one by one here. And we're going to start with best debut, the best debuting fighter of 2018. Well, before you guys say anything, yes, this is basically all UFC because it's what Rita and I are most familiar with, but also I scoured through looking in Bellator, PFL. I really couldn't find anything that was of real note, so we kind of just stuck with the UFC. So starting with best debut, my choice for best debut was Jeff Neal. He debuted at UFC 228 against Frank Camacho, and he put a clinic on that kid and kicked his fucking face off. That was one of the scariest knockouts I've seen in a while, and he really put his name out there. I'm very excited to see him once again, and I believe he did it in his hometown too, at least in his home state, because I believe he is from Texas. But Reen, what are your thoughts, and what's your pick for best debut of 2018?
I actually have to agree with you on this one. He's only 28 years old. He's a waiter by day. Did you know that? Like, he works like 40 to 50 hours, and then he goes and trains.
I did see that he was a waiter. I did not know he worked that much. I'm not surprised. You know, a lot of up and coming fighters, have day jobs. I just didn't think, especially with waiters, you know, sometimes they're part-time or they work half week but man, if he's getting a full wait, I've never waited tables in my life. I've talked to many people that have, and I know that it's no picnic. So for him to be doing that and training and looking as good as he does, that kid is committed. And I knew he was pretty young, but 28, yeah, that is pretty young still, man. That,
yeah, he's still like not in his prime. Wow, he's had subs, he's had knockouts, like, yeah. He's an exciting fighter, so yeah, he's definitely one to watch. I think he has a fight coming up in February, is it?
I think January or February. I think, yeah, one of the ESPN cards, I believe. I forget what it is, but wherever it is, I will seek it out. I don't care who the guy is. I'm almost certain that I'm going to go with Neil, regardless of who it is. But yeah, I'm very excited to see him again. It's been a while since a guy, his first fight in the UFC has impressed me that much. And that kid was firing on all cylinders from the minute they said go. I was beyond impressed with that kid. So yeah, keep a lookout. If you guys haven't seen him, yeah, Fight Pass, go back and watch UFC 228. And he was on the prelims, but he fought Frank Camacho. Watch that fight, because it's only two rounds, but it's just pure excellence from beginning to end. And the end was quite brutal. If you like knockouts, that's the fight for you. Check it out. We're going to move on from that. We're going to talk about prospect of the year. There's some good contenders. I debated. I was going to go with, I thought of Aaron Pico, but, you know, he's still young and he technically made his debut last year in Bellator. So he did look very good. But one other guy that also stuck out was Ray Cooper III. I forget how old he is, but he beat the shit out of Jake Shields twice in the PFL. That's the only other guy outside the promotion that really caught my, outside of the UFC that caught my attention. But for prospect of the year, given his record, how he came in and where he's at now, I'm going to go with Israel Adesanya. It's a bit odd even calling him prospect of the year, calling him a prospect, because he came in with some hype, not many people knowing him, and he ended the year as a top contender. And then he's going to fight Anderson Silva next, presumably for a title shot. So in 1 year and in less than five fights, he's world title bound. So that's my pick for prospect of the year. Rain, how about you?
Same for me too. Also excited to see him. It was this time last year, around this time last year, at MMA Junkie Studios. I was actually out there in Vegas for the Chris Cyborg Holly Holm fight. I was going kind of nuts. I don't really get starstruck with fighters, but when I see like a, you know, Israel Adesanya or Joe Schilling, I go crazy. When I saw him, I was like, oh wow, you know, it was really cool to see that. And then in February he debuted, and he's just been on a run ever since.
So you knew Adesanya from kickboxing, from, yeah, Glory, I assume?
Yeah, watching him from Glory kickboxing. And yeah, I was out there with Pam and Sam and Allie, and the whole crew was out there, and I turn around and look, and I was like, oh my God, that's Israel Adesanya. I'm like tripping out. So yeah, I totally fangirled out. But yeah, February he debuted 2018, and he's been on a run ever since. And I guess he's going to be fighting his hero pretty soon. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that fight.
I don't know what more can be said about Israel, though. Kind of jealous you got to meet him, that I became a fan of that guy since his debut. I really didn't know much about him. I heard some hype. I heard some things about him the week prior to his debut, and that's about as far as it got with me. But once he made his debut, I was like, damn, this kid's going to be a problem. But I knew he'd go far. I did not think he'd get to where he's at, though. I mean, that I think where I became a full believer was after that Tavares fight, the Brad Tavares fight. Three fights in, they give him a main event against not an easy guy. It's easy to say now that, oh, that was a tune-up fight or something. But Brad Tavares is not an easy fight for anybody. He's taken out a few contenders and a few prospects in his time. And Israel didn't lose a minute of that fight. He made it look easy. Even his grappling, Tavares couldn't do anything. And then one of the, like, although he didn't really drop him or do any big damage with it, one thing that he did in that fight still sticks out with me, where he grabbed Tavares' elbow. He was like kind of pawing with his hand, and he grabbed Tavares' wrist and came up with an elbow. That was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in recent memory. He's just a joy. He's a wonder to watch. So yeah, Israel Adesanya gets prospect of the year, from prospect to contender to possible future champion. What a story for that guy.
Yeah, and I hope now people know the difference between him and John Jones.
Oh yeah, because people were always saying, oh, this is the new John Jones. He's like a younger John Jones or whatever, right? That was all the comparisons when he came on.
Yes. So
yeah, I remember that. Yes. And to be fair, I don't really compare him to John Jones, but one thing that I totally get about that is not just that, yeah, he throws a lot of nice kicks and he is similar to John Jones in his style a bit, but obviously we know the difference. John Jones does not have that level of striking. As good as the striking is, it's nowhere near that. But I do get it, because it's gonna sound kind of racist, but I do mean this. They do look kind of look alike.
Sorry.
They do kind of look alike. And it's not just, they do have some, a bit of the face is a little bit different, but the build for sure. Tall, skinny, lanky, black eyes, you know, and.
Yeah. The legs.
Yeah. And then, you know, honestly, especially too, the way that Adesanya throws kicks, he throws them very similarly to John Jones. I kind of want to say that John Jones throws them like Adesanya because he's the more accomplished striker. But yeah, they do have a similar style. But if you think that Jon Jones can compete with Adesanya in a kickboxing match, you're out of your mind. That Israel's on a whole other level. But yeah, I'm with you there. These, you gotta let him be his own guy. He's definitely not just a Jones wannabe or a Jones clone. So moving on, we're gonna talk about best performance of the year. The same one fight, one single performance that stood out above all the rest. And the thing that stuck out to me the most, I can't even think of something that came close to it for me. The best performance of the year was Max Holloway. I know it's out of, I tried not to have it just be recency bias. I know the fight only happened a few weeks ago, but I mean, he really put on a clinic on Brian Ortega. I know it was competitive. I know Ortega had his moments, but it really was just that. It was just moments. It was never any real threat. One leg kick, one near takedown. I think an elbow in there somewhere. That was about all that Ortega got in that hurt Max, that affected Max in any kind of way. Other than that, it was just all Holloway, and he put it on Ortega. Although they're basically the same age, he sunned him. I mean, he beat him like a dad would beat a stepchild, man. He put him in his place of, you're here and I'm over here, and you need to come back to me with a few more fights and a few more tricks up your sleeve, because you're not gonna take me out this easily. Yeah, Reen, your thoughts on that, or your pick for performance of the year?
Okay, so I had that on my list because, man, that was just an epic performance. But I also have Dillashaw versus Garbrandt too on my list. So,
yeah, I can't fight you on that one. Yeah, that's a good pick. If you had to pick one, talk about Dillashaw and Garbrandt since that is your pick, since that is something that came up. But tell me your pick.
Yeah, that was just a great fight. I mean, from the build-up, you know, we had all the bad blood. Even the first one, I mean, everything was rolling back into this one. And then he just completely dominated Garbrandt. You know, it was better than the first fight. And he actually finished it in the first round at, like, 4 minutes and 10 seconds in.
So. Yeah, and it wasn't just that he beat Garbrandt, he beat him up in like what, 3 minutes, 4 minutes? Like, mm-hmm. It's rare. Usually a first round finish means you either got, I don't want to say luck, because, you know, submission, knockout, there's obviously a lot of skill in most finishes, but he did what he did in the first fight, but better and quicker.
Yes,
that's what was fast. That's what makes it more impressive, because it wasn't like he, and you can tell Garbrandt kind of was trying a different approach. I think he was trying more leg kicks. Yeah, he tried to wrestle a little bit more. So Garbrandt didn't come into this trying to just swing with TJ. I think it was obvious that his emotions got a little too high at one point, but that, you know, that's on him. The whole point is that TJ kept his cool and beat him even worse.
Yeah.
And now we're at a point with Cody where it's like, what's next for him? Because he was so good not too long ago, but he obviously is never going to beat TJ. And the way TJ is looking right now, I don't know who's going to beat him either.
Yeah, we haven't seen Cody since, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was what, 3-4 months ago? I mean,
that was August?
Yeah, it was August. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but still, he probably should take the time too, because it wasn't a brutal knockout and it was a quick finish, but still quite a beating. I know they said that he might step in to fight Lineker now that Dominic Cruz come out. Yeah, but I don't know if they ever confirmed it or denied it. I still don't know if Lineker even has an opponent, but I wouldn't look too forward to that for Cody, because I think that's just a really bad style matchup.
Yeah,
even if he wins, he's gonna get beat up and it's not gonna be easy.
No, Lineker's too hard to stop. He just keeps coming at you. Yeah. He'll eat some punches too, so good luck with that one.
So are you decisive with it? Are you gonna go with TJ for the performance, or with Max?
I think I'm gonna go with TJ on this one.
Yeah. Okay. What are your thoughts on the on the Max fight.
That was a good fight, but man, Dr. Stoppage in the round four. I actually called that one too. I keep repeating that. Called that one.
Yeah, it is impressive because not many people, it's easy to, this is the thing, I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent here, but this is the reason why I never fully understood why Conor became as big a star as he did. And then I realized like people were like, oh, yeah, of course he talks shit. Yeah, he just flashes and stuff. But, oh, he would call the rounds. You know, he said, I'm going to knock him out in the first round. He knocked him out in the first round. But I'm like, that's easy to say, especially with the way that Conor fights. He's a fast twitch guy and doesn't have a lot of cardio. So yeah, you better knock him out in the first or second because that's your only real options, you know. But to say, I'm going to finish, I mean, not just you, that called it in the fourth, Holloway called it in the fourth too, that's way more impressive to me because you're just feeling it. It's like I'm saying it and I'm doing it, and he did, man.
Yeah
that's crazy. That's much more impressive to me, and I'm not trying to be biased because I love Holloway and stuff. Like, I'm trying to be objective about that as possible, and I think it's more impressive to call your shot as it's happening during a wild fight. Mm-hmm. It's going on first round. And by the way, just to add on to that with Connor's been wrong quite a few times. So this whole Mystic Max shit is really throwing darts in the dark. And luckily for him, they just end up landing most of the time. But it's not something that he can predict these things, as he says.
Yeah. Well, with that, I'm still on the fence about that fight with Max and Brian. Because like I said before, like I think he had no business being in there. Not with Max. I thought it was too soon. So I think that's the reason why I don't think it's as impressive. It's like I expected Max to do that.
Yeah, okay. So well, what about TJ and Cody? Were you going into the rematch as this can go either way? It seemed like a lot of people did.
Yeah, it was either way. Like I had no idea. And then he would finish him almost the same in the same fashion as he did, you know, in part one.
Yeah. I saw that fight live, full disclosure, as I think I've said a few times through tweets, through other podcasts and stuff, that I'm not a fan of TJ or Cody, but people in Staples Center were psyched for that fight. I was so shocked. Like, wow, really? You guys are into this fight that much? I basically just went because I had the money and because there's a UFC in my backyard, I'm going to go. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the fight. It was quick. It was violent. The only thing I said before the fight happened, people were around me, hey, who are you going for, man? I said, I really don't care. I don't like either of them, but I just hope it's violent. And sure enough, I got my wish. So I'm not gonna complain. That was violent and it was impressive. I did rewatch the fight a few times. Like, I was kind of baffled by how dumb Cody was, of how emotional he got. At one point, but I understand it, but still, like, well, that's what happens.
Yeah.
But still, for the TJ to keep his cool like that, I mean, you could tell he was just steps ahead of him. He already knew what he was going to throw. I don't think it's just a matter of that they practiced and they sparred together. It's like he knew his mindset. You could tell looking at him, like, yeah, I know what you're going to do. I know you're mad. You're going to throw a right hook or you're going to throw a left hook. And he just, and then the fact he caught him with the same punch three times.
Oh, God, you know, yes.
He ended up finishing him with knees and stuff along the fence. He clobbered him. But the thing that really got it started was right hook. He threw three right hooks in a row as Cody was throwing his. It's just like, yeah, I know you're going to keep throwing it. I'm going to keep throwing mine, and I'm going to get you. Watch. Because you always put your hands down, and you're always way too reckless. And that's exactly what happened. And the same punch that he caught him in the first fight, too. He knocked him out with a right hook in the first fight. And he basically knocked him out with three right hooks in the second fight.
Right? Yeah, it's like they never change up their game plan. But yeah, I probably will get a lot of hate because, you know, I go to that UFC gym.
Oh,
yeah. Uriah Faber's UFC gym. So,
but you know what? You got to call it like it is. And I remember this is before we started a podcast or any of that. But I remember I reached out to you after that, and even you were like, I forget exactly what you said, but you were just like, Cody needs to get his head back in the game, basically, kind of thing.
Yeah. I was going for TJ. Oops, sorry. Sorry, Zach.
Well, I think TJ's training here now, but I think I was born in California, but I don't remember if it was.
He's north. Up here in Northern California. God, I forgot which town now. He came from a little town up here, so.
I know Angel's Camp is, I think, where he grew up, but I don't know.
Yes, I think so. But yeah,
it's kind of a Stockton area, right?
Yeah, it's in North Cal, so. And then, of course, you know, he was training in Sacramento, you know, Alpha Male, and I've been in that gym, and some of the coaches train at the Uriah Faber UFC gym, but oh, well, I gotta say how it is, you know?
Good on Rain, always doing her thing of calling it like it is. That's why I got you on. So that was the performance. So I picked Max over Ortega. Rain's got TJ over Garbrandt in the rematch. We're going to move straight on to comeback fighter of the year. I was thinking of fighters that weren't doing so hot in 2017 and came back and had a good year in 2018. But the people that stood out to me most weren't exactly in that category. I ended up going with Yair Rodriguez for my comeback fighter of the year. He only had one fight in 2017. No, I'm sorry. He had two fights. I forgot he clobbered BJ Penn and then got shit kicked by Frankie Edgar. But it's not that he was coming off a loss and ended up getting a win. Far from it. You fill in the lines. He was on an extended layoff after the Frankie win. And plus, he got beat down. What was it, Reen? Was it his orbital bone that got broken, right? Those images? Yair, when he fought Frankie, remember?
Oh, God, yeah.
They stopped the fight because swollen shut. Yeah, that was disgusting. But you know, he got injured with that, and then he took some time off, and then he took more time off, and then it's like, well, what's happening with Yair? And then Dana saying that he was turning down fights, and then he accepted a fight, and then he got fired.
On his day off. I had to add that again.
he seriously got fired, and then got his job back. What, a few days or week later?
Yeah, they allowed him to shop around, and then he came back.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was he was supposed to fight Zabit on the, what was it, on 228, UFC 228, and he pulled out, and then, you know, they kind of had enough of his shit that, like, all right, you're just never going to fight again. You're just not interested in this. And then Frankie Edgar gets hurt while he was supposed to fight Korean Zombie on the 25th anniversary Denver card. It was a free card, but man, it was gigantic. So Yair takes a last minute fight against the Korean Zombie. I don't even know how many people are willing to fight Korean Zombie with a full camp, much less on a few weeks' notice. At Elevation, on one of the biggest cards of the year, he fights him, was getting outpointed, had his moments here and there, but was getting outpointed, and maybe the flukiest shot in MMA history, throws a no-look upwards elbow as Korean Zombie's running in and knocks him dead with a second left in the, like, you couldn't write this shit. Nobody would ever believe it. This is one of the most craziest things I've ever seen in my life of what happened. But he's comeback fighter of the year, not because he came off a loss and won, not because he came off a bad loss and won impressively. People were shitting on Yair so badly. You know, people started calling him a pussy and a bitch and a coward because he pulled out with a beat and didn't want to accept all these fights. I mean, even Dana saying things along those lines. He had such a big fan base, and then it seemed like in 2018 they just abandoned him because they were getting tired of him. But after that fight with a Korean Zombie, everyone in the world, even if you were never a Yair Rodriguez fan, like, everyone became a fan of his instantly. So I don't know who has a better comeback than that, from coming from basically the lowest of lows, everyone doubting you, everyone shitting on you, losing your job, coming back, having one of the craziest fights of the year, if not ever, and having one of the greatest knockouts easily of all time. What sorry, I kind of went on a tangent there, but what is your pick? I'll just leave it there. What's your pick for a comeback fighter of the year?
Well, I had thought about Yair too, but I was also thinking about Tony Ferguson.
Good pick.
Yeah. I mean, he was supposed to fight Khabib back in April. Next thing you know, we get this message, or Twitter blows up because we find out that he's injured. He tripped on some wires and he had this massive, like, knee surgery.
Ripped the ACL off the bone, if I remember correctly.
It's crazy. And 6 months, it only took him 6 months mm-hmm. to recover and then come back and fight Anthony Pettis. And that fight, I went actually watched that fight again. Man, that was an amazing fight. I mean, they're like, you know, pushing off the cages and, like, you know, swinging at each other, and they're on the ground. They're all bloody. And I mean, it was a war, and it was a fun fight too. It was a war and a fun fight at the same time. So for him to come back and actually take those leg kicks from Anthony Pettis, I mean, that scared me.
That's right. I forget. That was like the first thing he threw at him, right? And they were hard to. Pettis isn't like a real well-known leg kicker, but I remember he was like,
He's going after that.
Yeah, and it was almost like, I just need one good one and you're fucking done. And Ferguson just ate him. I mean, I still, yeah, I don't know if there's a more mentally hard, mentally prepared person than Tony Ferguson. It's funny that, I mean, he has incredible fights, obviously, and he's always has like a fight of the year contender somewhere down the line. But I remember one of the things that like freaked me out about him, like seriously, where I was like, damn, this guy's terrifying. Wasn't even a fight. Wasn't even like Lando Venata, you know, him coming back from getting head kicked and shit like that. Like, obviously that shows tremendous heart. But one of the things that always freaked me out was, I think I was watching one of the countdowns and he would get in ice tubs and would never make a sound. Like, wouldn't breathe hard, wouldn't scream, wouldn't shriek, wouldn't shiver, nothing. He'd just get in, close his eyes. And he reminds me of like that infamous image. It was the cover of the Rage Against the Machine album, the monk on fire, not moving, not screaming, not doing anything. Like, that's what he's like when he gets into the ice bath, like just totally stoic. And that's when I realized, like, man, this guy's mind just goes somewhere else. He has something that like 99.9% of people, even fighters, don't have. He's out of his mind.
Yeah, he was smiling. I mean, he was eating those leg kicks, those punches, like, and he was smiling and having a good time. And he was walking Pettis down. I'm like, wow, 6 months, that's it? And you're back and you're dominating?
Yeah, and the other thing too is that I remember, I think even I said this, was like, I wasn't mad about the fight because Pettis is obviously an exciting fighter and I knew it would be a good fight. But I also thought it was like, I thought it was kind of a weird fight because Pettis isn't exactly a top contender at this point. So I was like, man, are they giving him a tune-up fight, or is this just, are they punishing Pettis because he'd been acting kind of diva-ish, for lack of a better term, this year? Like, I didn't fully get it. And once the fight, you know, happened, like, Pettis had a lot to offer, obviously. But yeah, I mean, he was way meaner in that fight. He was way meaner in that fight than he has been in a long time. And yeah, you could tell he really wanted it. And then, of course, he dropped him in the second round. And Tony being Tony did that weird cartwheel flip thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was just fun. And then that, when he was bleeding and sticking his tongue out, and he had him on the ground and shit. I mean, Pettis lost his mind there too. And he, I don't know if it was him or Duke that, you know, they called the fight because he broke his hand. But to be fair to him, he's broken his hand so many times too. So.
Yeah, it was Duke.
And you know you trust them and stuff too, but yeah, when you have that many injuries, you really got to be careful because you never know, you could hit a nerve, you can maybe even do some permanent damage to it. So
yeah,
I wasn't even mad that they called the fight, and he was getting beat up too.
Yeah, that was a fun fight, but I think people forget about that fight because of, you know, the Khabib McGregor
situation. Yeah, all the stuff that happened on that card too. But yeah, that was such a, yeah, I did lose my mind during that fight. That was crazy. And I know Tony has his share of haters, but I dare you to see that fight and not be happy for him.
That was
such a, and then him, I think he cried afterwards, right, in the cage. Like, he was just so emotional sitting down.
Yeah, him and Eddie Bravo had a little moment.
I remember, they didn't really focus on it, but I remember him, and I remember feeling it, like, man, he probably thought his career was over when his ACL, honestly, you know, I mean, it was that severe that it went off the bone. Like, even if you come back, are you ever going to be the same? And he looked probably better than ever against Showtime.
Yeah, and I wasn't really a fan of Ferguson, because he kind of disrespected Chris Cyborg. So we'll talk about that probably in a different conversation.
I definitely got to jot this down because I'm unaware of this. So we have Cyborg coming up for next week. So yeah, maybe we can touch on that then.
Just, it was cool watching that fight. So I'm going to go with Tony Ferguson. I don't hate you that much anymore.
That's saying something, because, you know, us MMA fans can be stubborn. Once we hate someone, you kind of just carry that.
Yep, for sure. That's
true. Yep. I actually, on a bit of a side note, someone was making lists like, oh, top 10 fighters that it's okay to hate, and almost every fighter I put on the list, everyone's like, wait, what's your problem with so-and-so? What's your problem? I tended to go with people that were truly heinous, you know, the Greg Hardy types and the people who've done some awful shit. But it seems like people always had an issue with someone that I put. So yeah. Anyway, so moving on. So we're going to talk about best card of the year now. I ended up going with UFC 228. That was the Dallas card, Darren Till and Tyron Woodley. I mentioned earlier, Jeff Neal's debut. That was on that card. So this one, from top to bottom, I can't think of a bad fight on that card. There was a Aljamain Sterling got that Suluev stretch, as did Sabit. Jeff Neal, obviously, as I already mentioned, the knockout that he got. And then what I think a lot of people slept on, and this for sure, if you have not seen it, you definitely need to go to Fight Pass and check this out. Irene Aldana versus Lucy Purilova. That fight was insane and maybe the women's fight of the year. That was absolute madness, man. That's one of the craziest fucking fights I've seen in a long while. That was on that card too. And then the main card, I remember, was just pure violence. Some quick knockouts. As I said, there's a submission. Jessica Andrade sending Carolina Kovalkovich to fucking Pluto with her right hand. The main event, Tyron Woodley, was a underdog against Darren Till, you know, coming off of a long layoff himself. Darren Till just looking really good up until that point, and Woodley never gave him a shot. He wrestled him early, second round, dropped his ass with a giant punch, elbowed him nearly to death, and then got, honestly, maybe one of the best Darce chokes I've ever seen in my life. I can't think of one that sticks out right now that may be better than that one. That was one of the cleanest Darce chokes. I mean, Tony Ferguson could do no better. Honestly, I'll give Tyron Woodley that respect, that he's on that level. On that night with that choke, that was elite of the elite stuff. What say you, Reen?
I am going with UFC 229. That's my favorite so far.
That is Khabib versus McGregor, right?
Yeah, unless, you know, the upcoming card, the end of the year, top.
Yeah, we got one more. And there's a few topics here where things can change, but I think for the most part, we're going to get this right.
Yeah, but yeah, UFC 229. And that's the card where Derek Lewis was actually losing that fight. He came back and he knocked out Volkov, and then he had that epic speech with Joe Rogan, the hot balls comment. So yeah, that was memorable. And of course the rest of the card was awesome. I mean, from start to finish, I mean, even the prelims, it was pretty exciting. So yeah, this is my favorite card overall for the year.
Yeah, I can't think of a bad fight on that card off the top of my head.
Yeah.
To add to the Derek Lewis thing too, that moment, it wasn't just one of the biggest, like, funniest and weirdest MMA moments of the year. That was like a giant sports moment. You know, that shit was on ESPN, on Instagram, on Twitter. Like, people who didn't even know about the sport were aware of Derek Lewis. And I remember just thinking after the fight too, I don't even think I heard that when it happened. I wasn't paying attention, as just because of how nuts I was going after that fight. But that's one of the best worst fights ever, and Derek Lewis in general is one of the best worst fighters ever. He's really not that good. He really isn't, but man, he's entertaining, and he's just a great dude. Remember, I believe it was last year with the hurricane, him helping people with his big ass truck, even white guys with Confederate flags and shit. And for those of you that don't know, he has quite a bit of history with questionable white folks in the South. Let's say he ended up going to jail because he beat the shit out of a white supremacist. So that goes to show where he's come in life too. Not just that, you know, he has some money now and he's a famous UFC fighter, that he went to jail, came out a better person, and even went out of his way to help people who probably would not help him if they were in the same, if he was in a similar situation. So
yeah, he's still,
it's hard to not love Derek Lewis, but he is, I mean, he's just a character. He's a character all around, and he's a very funny character. He's a very kind character, but man, it's really just, above all, it's just hard not to love the guy.
Yeah, he's a national treasure. He really is, man.
That's so the best way to put it.
Yeah, his speeches are awesome. I think last year, too, a lot of us media people, we were actually hitting up McDonald's to sponsor him or give him something, especially during that hurricane time, because he was helping all those people, right? So we were hitting up, you know, McDonald's, like, hey, man, do something for him. You know, he loves McRibs. He loves McRibs.
And oh, that's right.
Yeah, so they finally did acknowledge that. So that was cool.
And then on a side note here, it's just, I know he's mentioned that, but I guess I forgot because of the hot balls thing, obviously. I mean, it was a thing on his own, but then the thing with DC and Popeyes, and then Carl's Jr. getting in the mix somehow with DC. That was the weirdest shit, that Popeyes ended up sponsoring Lewis, right? And then Carl's Jr. of all places ends up going with DC.
Yeah,
that was a weird. We're gonna talk about that in a minute because there's plenty to be said about a couple of cards this year and a couple of moments. But okay, so that was best card. So I went with 228. Green went with 229. I think those will probably be on the top of most people's lists. I went with just value as far as the fights went. I know with 229, I mean, it couldn't be ignored. It's good that a card that big ended up being good on fight night too, not just on paper. So yeah, I'm not mad at your pick either, Rain. 228 229, yeah.
Blood, sweat, tears, humor, like it had it all. And then the drama at the end, like what the hell. so
next up we got best submission. So yeah, I'm just gonna say it, Zabit Magomed Sharipov, his, I don't even know what to call it, his modified Suluev stretch. Man, what? Oh man, I'm forgetting the guy's name. I'm so sorry. I'll look it up in a minute. But his Suluev stretch of that guy he fought on 228, it was so remarkable. It was the last thing anyone expected. Not just because the submission's rare, but even the way he got it. You know, he started out wrestling him the second round, and you saw he was getting dominant position. He was working his way something, and then you know, he ended up getting his back. So naturally, as most people, like, well, he's gonna get a rear naked choke, or if he's feeling really feisty, he might go for an armbar. No, somehow he locked him up and ended up going for his leg and got a tap from a Suluev stretch. Like, man, the balls more than anything to think of that, to pull that off, the creativity. I don't care that it's not on the highest ranked opponent, just that shows his mindset. And that's the thing that impresses me about Zabit more than anything. It's not just his skill, it's his creativity and his gamesmanship. You know, he looks like a very nice, humble guy, but when he gets in there, he has like a Muhammad Ali, Anderson Silva, Conor McGregor, like he has like this belief in himself and the showmanship. Like, he doesn't say much, but he's one of those guys that definitely lets the fighting do the talking. And yeah, that was beyond impressive. What's your pick, Rina?
My pick is heavyweight fighter Alexio Olenek.
Alexio Olenek, yeah.
Yeah, I always pronounce his name wrong.
he's submitted. So weird.
Yeah. So he submitted Junior Albini with an Ezekiel choke. And this is his second one. He actually owns the first one too. He did it in 2017. But with this one, he actually grabbed the neck while standing and Albini trips him. And Albini ends up on the dominant position, or so he thought. And next thing you know, he's just grabbing his neck slow and he locked it in and he taps. It was crazy. Like, he grabbed him standing. And then, yeah, Albini made a mistake. He actually tripped him. And
yeah, so, I think I remember, because I was having a hard time remembering this. You'd mentioned this earlier off air. And I was having a hard time remembering it because I kept thinking about the one last year where the guy got the mount on him. But yeah, I think that's why it went over my mind was, yeah, he tried. It seemed like he tried to do it standing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
he
then
tried to do it standing. He was grabbing his neck. Next thing you know, Albini trips him down.
So he tripped him trying to, like, okay, you're going to get off because you're going to fall to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Just going with him, right?
Yep. So he's like, all right, cool. And then just locks it in. And he taps.
Man, Alexia.
Round one.
That's another character, man. Alexia Linick. Like, I don't think that guy speaks a word of English, but another guy lets the fighting do the talking, but he's what, like 45? He's fucking ancient.
Yeah.
45. And he has like 80 something fights or something.
Yeah, something like that, like 70 fights. He was actually cut up and hurt in that fight, too. I forgot about that part. He was cut up and hurt, and then, yeah, just desperation. I think he grabbed him standing. It was crazy.
Just stereotype. And then that was this year, too, I believe, when he submitted Mark Hunt, right? I think he got him to the rear naked. But I remember I was so impressed in that fight because he damn near knocked Mark Hunt's head off with a punch. Mark Hunt just ate it. He didn't even stumble, but I was like, I remember seeing that fight, like, man, this dude could crack. So he has those hands, man, but he threw it at the wrong guy. Mark Hunt, you need a sledgehammer to knock that fucking guy out, you know? But yeah, I forgot about this this Albini sub. And the fact, yeah, because it's one thing last, I mean, when he did it the first time, it was very ballsy. Obviously, he let the guy mount him so he can get it. But this one's like you said, he was desperate. He was kind of trying to get his mind right. And in trying to be defensive, Albini fucked himself over.
Yeah. I guess he's done that 11 other times or something.
Just 11 times.
Yeah, just 11, but yeah, two in the UFC, but yeah. Nine other times.
Yeah, I think he's done it at least 10 times for sure. Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Crazy, man. So, yeah, heavyweight fighter doing that, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, cuz especially like I said, he has power, and most heavyweights rely on their power just, hey, as long as I hit him, I'm good. Mm-hmm. He prefers submissions, and he goes from, and he's strong as shit too. Like Alexei Oleinik, like the perfect example of dad strength. You know, it's just some grown man strength, and he's Russian, so he just has that tinge of fear. You know, he's kind of intimidated by him. Yeah, he's a character. He's a character in all the reasons that, in all the ways, and all the reasons that Derek Lewis is not. But I appreciate them both.
Yeah. Yeah, he has a very nice neck. Like, I squeeze it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, too, I know Mark Hunt doesn't have the best submission defense and best grappling in the world, but man, he submitted him easily. He didn't even struggle. Like, man, it shouldn't be easy to submit such a big guy like Hunt, but he's done it so many times. It's like tying his shoes. He didn't have to think about it. He just did it. Okay, so that was submission. So I went with the beat over Brandon Davis. That was the guy I couldn't remember earlier. Sorry, Brandon. I do like Brandon Davis too. I thought he had a chance going into that fight because he's a firecracker, that guy. But the beat really is just the real deal. So now we're going to move on to knockout. Best knockout of the year. I'll let you start with this one, Reen. What did you have for this?
Man, I had two people on the list. Two fights on the list. Yair Rodriguez versus Korean Zombie. Crazy elbow KO. I love elbow attack. So, of course, I picked that. But I actually picked Machida versus Vitor, too, because of that crazy front kick that he did. Again. So
those are also my top two picks. But, yeah, I'll let you continue. I'll say my thoughts in a second.
That was round two, going into the first minute or something. He just, out of nowhere, that front kick to the face, and then Vitor's just dead. And I think that was Vitor's last fight, wasn't it?
Well, there's that rumor that came around a day or two ago that he's going to come out of retirement, and people started shrieking in horror.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but I don't know. Vitor's an odd guy. He always has been. You can't take his word for it. I'm not saying to believe him, but I'm also not saying to not believe him either. Like, I don't know. I hope not. Bellator's always out there. I don't even know if his contract would allow it, because he just retired, and people forget that just because you retire doesn't mean that your contract is all of a sudden void. You still have to honor it if you have fights on there. But
wow,
I don't know if Dana would allow him to fight again, or if he wants him to. It's not like a Chuck Liddell situation, you know?
Yeah, well, the last KO was brutal. Courtesy of Machida.
Yeah.
He just folded. He like deaded him. And then there's Machida again bowing. Like it was a normal thing.
What did you think of that? I heard some people say that it's kind of although it's obviously meant to be respectful, that it just seemed kind of dickish at the end. Like, it seemed almost embarrassing. Like,
it was
to like your master, you know? It's like, it was like if your sensei were to do that to you, and it's like, yeah, he's just going to bow because he's a respectful martial artist, but really he could just kick the shit out of you and your whole family.
Right? It was his last fight too, and then it happened, and then he bowed. I'm like, oh my God.
I honestly had a completely different opinion of Machida after that fight. Like, it kind of changed my whole outlook on him, because there's never been a moment in Machida's career where he's looked like an asshole to me. Like, he may possibly be the nicest man in MMA from all accounts, you know. He doesn't even like to hit guys after they're done, you know. He restrains from hitting guys even before the ref gets there. I mean, he's a true gentleman. But for you to knock out a legend like Vitor Belfort in his last fight, a fight that he said way in advance, this is my last fight. And you're not just going to knock him out. You obviously have to win the fight. That's fine. You could have thrown a head kick. You could have thrown a liver kick. No, you got him with the fucking front kick that your homeboy Anderson Silva got him with. The exact same one. The rear foot, him being a southpaw, it was a left foot. It was exactly the same. It was just only slightly worse because he didn't punch him when he fell because he was fucking dead on arrival.
Oh my God. How dare you, right? I'm like laughing.
That's literally a kick in the face. That's, you know, kick someone when you're down, spit in my face, like all that shit. He didn't have to go that far, but he did. I mean, I know you can just say he saw the opening and he took it, but like, dude, you know you didn't have to do that. You know you didn't have to do that, but you did.
Oh my God, I'm in tears. Yeah, he did look bad after. You're right.
I mean, the bowing is I know what it was meant for. I know he didn't mean it to disparage him, but the way that it went down and just the fact that he committed that heinous hate crime on Vitor Belfort's face. Jesus Christ.
You said hate crime.
Come on. I mean, the way that Anderson did, you know, he's on a highlight reel to the day that he dies. Oh, Anderson Silva's front foot in his face, the match made in heaven or in hell, according to Vitor. But he had to suffer it one more time before he went.
Oh man, too funny. I think that was that comeback fight for him too. And then he gets that spectacular tech to the face.
He beat
Eric Anders, that's right.
But it was kind of disputed and it wasn't that impressive. And
yeah.
Vitor was cool because, all right, they're both old guys. They're both kind of done in a way. But then Machida was like, fuck that. So, and then, I mean, now that going back at it, the fact that he knocked out Randy Couture with a flying front kick on his last fight, too. Like, I think Machida just has a hard on for fucking old dudes up as they're about to retire.
Oh, my God.
I forgot about that. That was, I don't know, that may have been colder. That's Captain America, man. Sure, he's jerking off in front of us now, but come on.
Oh my God. So, we should maybe talk about that later. Or maybe now since you brought it up, but I guess he's in a legal battle over that video now. Randy Couture. Yeah.
I have no idea. This is the first I heard of it.
Yeah, because I guess the gal wasn't supposed to release it. She was recording him.
So it was a girl that was... I didn't see it. I have no idea about that.
I didn't see it either, but it was on Fighter and the Kid because one of the interns or whoever that, you know, helps him out, I forgot his name, they pulled it up and they were talking about it and laughing about it. And I was actually in tears listening to that.
Yeah. I heard clips of it. But is that the thing, like, oh, now people are, like, the whole thing of, like, damages, like, ruining my reputation and...
Yeah.
Private, like, all that type of shit?
Yeah, well, I was listening to it yesterday, and they're like, oh, you know, we're sorry, we didn't know they're going into, you know, legal issues with this, because this girl should have never released it, you know, they're calling her, you know, a douchebag for doing that, so yeah, that girl's gonna be in trouble, because she wasn't supposed to do that at all, like, he didn't know. It wasn't Randy that released it, so, but yeah, they were, like, apologizing about it, because they were making fun of him for that video, so...
I'm sorry, that's actually really sad, but it I'm gonna go out on the limb here and say I think most 20 to 30 year olds have had their scare of nudes being leaked online or a sex tape or something that you don't want out. I think it's fair to say a lot of us have had that scare, because this is 2018, this is what young people do. When you're in your 40s and 50s, man, this shouldn't be a fucking issue. Come on, maybe that's why I didn't want to watch it. Like, I respected him enough. I was like, man, sure, there's some gossip, some, as we say in Spanish, some chisme that can go around with this. But, like, I respect Randy Couture enough to not see his dick.
Yeah, I couldn't watch it either. Like I told you, I had it up on Pornhub. Like, I Googled it. It said porn. I'm like, no, I can't press it. That's Captain America. No. I can't. I won't be able to watch his fights the same ever again. So I didn't. So I'm glad I didn't.
Expendables will have
us. Oh, Lord.
It's going to be tainted more than it already has.
Right? It's already tainted with a bunch of steroids, but...
They're not fighting for real, so it's okay.
Okay.
So I let you go with that one. So, okay, so you picked Machida. And you had mentioned Yair, and as I said too, those were my top two picks, but my number one is Yair. I had mentioned it already with the comeback fighter of the year. But just to talk about that elbow, I mean, talking about Zabit and his creativity, it's no surprise that Yair is a creative, wild motherfucker. We've seen that since his UFC debut. But man, it's one thing with his kicks. We all know he's a Taekwondo guy. He's got amazing kicks. You know, his boxing's not all there. And it got better. It did improve with the Korean Zombie fight. But that elbow is... Here's the thing. Talking about it on a technical aspect, it really was so fluky. Not just because it hit in the last second. Not just because it was so awkward. Like, that's not sound to bend over at the waist, like literally where your body's in an L shape. That's not sound in any kind of fighting, but especially in Muay Thai. I mean, in Muay Thai, they don't even like you to dip because you could take a knee to the face. And Yair just said, fuck it. I'm ducking down like if I'm about to tie my shoes and I'm just going to throw this little bitch up there. And he threw it and he knocked him dead with it. The chances of that happening are so minuscule, so just out there. Like, and he threw it once before. Like, he saw obviously some kind of opening, so he never paid for it. It's not something that any coach is going to see and advise his fighters to do. But man, how sensational. Like, I don't know if we'll even ever see a knockout like that. Not just in the last second of that, but I don't know if anyone's ever going to throw that again and land the way that he landed. I don't know if it can get any more brutal or more sensational or more shocking.
Yeah, he had a lot of power too. Like, just bam, like, wow.
Well, Chan Sung Jung ran face first into it. You know, I mean, it was... partly
him coming into it. Well,
yeah, being careless. But say what you want about him being careless, that's the last thing he even expected to get caught with.
Yeah,
it looked like he ran in knowing, like, I'm gonna get hit, I'm gonna take a few jabs, maybe even a head kick, I'm ready to eat it so I can hit this motherfucker. But elbow coming from the pits of hell straight to your chin, there's no bracing for that. That's a whole other level of pain and doom.
Yeah, crazy, man.
And then it got to him too. It wasn't just the fact that he lost. I mean, he was embarrassed. You know, he said, like, man, that's the most embarrassing thing I think I've ever done or seen. Like, I felt bad. I heard that little interview a few days after the fight. Like, man, I totally feel for you, man. Like, you had that fight in the bag, man. You had it. You had it. And I don't look at Korean Zombie any less than I ever did. That was insane. I may even have more respect for him, but the respect that I have for Yair, I was one of those fans, as I mentioned earlier, I was one of those fans that I was never too big on him. I wasn't I was never like this giant fan of his, but I did like him. But I was one of those fans too. It was just like, dude, get with the program. Are you going to fight or not? I even looked at him like what a lot of people are saying now, like this new breed of fighters, like these fucking Gentiles, like they just want money fights and they just want fights that'll work out for them and easy fights and things of that nature. But he took one of the worst style matchups and one of the worst positions and one of the worst climates in Denver, you know, at altitude. And he went five hard rounds and then collapsed afterwards too because he had broken his foot. Like, Jesus Christ, the heart on that guy. That's just absolutely incredible. I don't know what else I could say about that fight and that elbow, but that blew me away. That there's nothing else I can say. That blew me away. Getting closer and closer. So that was the best knockout of the year. Yair Rodriguez for me. Lyoto Machida for Reen. So we're going to move on to best fighter. So my pick for best fighter is Daniel Cormier, becoming the second champ in UFC history and becoming the first fighter in UFC history to defend both titles. He started the year by TKOing Volkan Ozdemir. He ends up fighting Stipe and knocking him out in the first round to get the title. And then he submits Derek Lewis at the end of the year to get his first title defense. So that's my pick. What's yours, Reen?
Same.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to go any other way, I think.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, the only other person that kind of came to mind, especially that I was trying to think outside the box, was Gegard Mousasi, because, you know, he left the UFC and he won the title and then beat Rory McDonald. But, you know, I'm sorry to say, I like Mousasi. I am a fan. But the fact, especially with Rory, the way that he went down, I wasn't impressed. I wasn't impressed by Rory. And in turn, that kind of damaged Mousasi's performance a little bit. But that's the only guy I could think of that had such a good run and some impressive wins. But DC, I mean, he did the unthinkable. You know, him beating Stipe, it wasn't out of the realm of possibility, but to knock him out in the first round, knock him out cold, you know, not even really. He used his wrestling to get the punch, but he never slammed him. He never got top position on him. He just, you know, swung that right hand. It landed and two or three on the floor, and that was it. And then taking the Derek Lewis fight on a few weeks' notice, just for a payday, just for the fuck of it, save the event, which not a lot of fighters are willing to do. Just that gamer mentality deserves some respect, I think.
I think so, too. Not only that, just what he does outside of the cage, too. I mean, he's doing, you know, commentary. He's doing all this, you know, analyst work. And then he's up here helping the kids' wrestling team and Gilroy.
Gilroy, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so he's doing all that. And he's still at AKA. Training. Yeah, at AKA, training. And he's still doing the thing. He's still winning in two different divisions. So, I mean, you got to just give it to him.
Yeah. And I mean, he's going to retire soon too, if you believe him. So to do these things basically in your last year of competition, you know, that's not the way it goes for most people in any field of work, but especially fighting. I mean, he's 39, you know, and yes, obviously he's lost before, and his only loss is to John Jones, and one of them was sketchy.
Yeah.
But man, like how, and we're going to talk about this soon. If we don't talk about it right now, we're going to talk about it next week with that man, John Jones, fighting next week. But it's crazy. It's there's still some people who will not give DC his credit, but I think they're in the minority now. Whereas even a year ago, they were probably at least maybe half of the MMA fan base, if not the majority. Now it seems like he's really turned the corner and people are liking him.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's just because Jones doesn't get the fucking picture and will not stop fucking up and people gave up on him. I really think and I really hope that it's because people just acknowledge DC's greatness and his achievements.
I think it's both. The Stipe fight definitely helped. And then I think just the humor behind the Derek Lewis fight going into that. You know, I think we got to see like the fun side.
Yeah.
DC. Everybody else got to see it too, you know, so.
And the other thing with the Stipe fight too is that he beat the best UFC heavyweight ever. Possibly one of the greatest MMA heavyweights ever.
Yeah.
In one round, you know, and you know, you got to remember he beat Ozdemir on that UFC 220 card, but Stipe beat Ngannou. And this is when Ngannou was fucking probably the most terrifying man in UFC history. He schooled him. He took him, you know, he put a clinic on him. And DC still, man, he smashed him. And it's not like he was doing great. He was losing that round, honestly. He had his moments. He was doing okay. But he was losing, and what, 30 seconds left in the first round, clips him and finishes him. But, you know, he wasn't looking great, and yet he still finished him, you know, in a heartbeat.
Yeah, wasn't it like an uppercut and a clinch, and then next thing you know, a right hand, right, dropped him?
Yeah, he was going for like that, yeah, like that dirty boxing thing. And then he kind of faked like a takedown. He kind of went for like an underhook type thing. And Stipe did like the right thing of backing away and kind of pushing him off. But as he was doing that, DC pushed him and threw him right in the line of fire of his overhand right. And that's what dropped him.
So crazy, man.
They did just that too. The with the finish with Stipe is like the knowledge and the intuition to, you know, obviously you can tell that he thought about that. It wasn't just like some random thing of like he failed on a takedown attempt and just threw a punch. Like you could tell that he was thinking about it and probably even drilled it in practice. Yeah. So yeah, we're both in agreement there. Best fighter, DC. I mean, was it ESPN named him what, like in the top 10 of like athletes of the year and stuff? Like,
good, wow.
Yeah, I forget what the number was, but he was up there. Like, he was above, I think, even like LeBron and like big name athletes. I was like, wow. But even they couldn't deny it. Like, you know, they could have put Khabib or someone who, I mean, you know, Khabib beating Conor and shit. Like, that's impressive. But no, they put DC, like, they didn't just go with, well, everyone knows who Connor is. Everyone knows who he's like. They went with the guy who earned it, who really put the work in. And props to ESPN for that, too.
Yay, so. Finally, MMA getting some recognition.
Yeah, legit, you know, especially now with Mayweather's coming back. So we. What? Oh, shit. We could talk about that next week, too. Oh, my God. Okay, next week should be fun.
Okay.
Yeah, because he's fighting what? a day or two after Jones. So
yeah,
that could be insane. Yeah.
Supposedly, allegedly fighting.
Well, okay. So I'm going to have you, did you see, I don't know if I linked it to you. Did you see that video of him getting his head rubbed, Mayweather? He's going to
yes.
See that thing, like caption this.
Yes.
I think I put like, how can I sue Ryzen if Tenshin head kicks me?
Oh, come on.
You know, he's thought about it. Of Maybe course. Not at that moment, but man, I hope he's smart enough to think about it.
I bet there's a clause in there or something.
Yeah.
But then again, it's the Japanese. It. They didn't honor, you know, the contract with the UFC, so with pride. Mm-hmm. You know.
And they have as much power and money, I'm sure, especially then. Yeah. So, okay, best fighter, DC, we're both in agreement there. Okay, so now we're getting to the juicy stuff. Best fight of the year. I'll let you start on this one, Reen.
It was a toss-up between Gaethje Poirier versus Ferguson Pettis. Boy, I'm going to go with Ferguson Pettis. Because, you know, that Gaethje fight, it was fun. He had a lot of shots. There was a lot of eye pokes.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, eye pokes stopped the momentum a couple times. I think there's like three or four. They both got eye
pokes, right?
Yeah, they both got them.
Yeah.
Stop the momentum. But yeah, Gaethje wasn't really defending a whole lot. He was just eating a lot of shots and it was just all dusting. At least
I think he may have won maybe one, two rounds if he was lucky.
Right? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think a lot of people put it up on their list as their number one, but I think I have to go with Ferguson Pettis just because, you know, Tony's comeback, Pettis is there. Yeah, he's not. I don't think he was ranked or anything, right? I have to check the ranking.
I think he was in the top 10 because he beat Chiesa. He got that quick armbar on him earlier in the year. People were like, man, Pettis is bad. I think he was like maybe like number 7 or number 8. He was up there, but yeah, he wasn't top 3 or top 5.
Top 5 or anything, yeah. Episode. But yeah, that was an exciting fight just for both of them. And yeah, I'm going to go with Ferguson Pettis as my best fight of the year.
Yeah, it was... I mean, I like that you said that too, because I think most people don't even consider fights that are not 5 rounds. Like they don't even want to consider them for fight of the year. Like first, they better be 5 rounds. They better be a main event or a title fight. And even if they are 5 rounds, like it better have gone 5 rounds. Because like there's like this, I feel like a lot of people get this thing of like, you got to get your money's worth. So if it was just, you know, yeah, a 2-round fight is great, but a 5-round fight is better. Like that's not always the case. You know, there's been, I don't remember who won fight of the year that year, but one of my top fights that year was Ferguson versus Barboza, and they fought. That was a 2-round fight. But it was absolutely insane. And then I could say the same thing about him and Venata too. Like those 2-round fights, but they were insane. And they had more action than a lot of 5-round fights. So I have no problem naming those. I don't think I ever named them fight of the year, but I was definitely like, if you don't think that's at least top 2, top 3, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got no issues with that.
Yeah, I thought it was more technical too. A little bit more technical. Throwing some elbows, you know, jumping off, you know, using the cage and throwing a punch and...
somersaulting his way out of knockdowns.
Yeah, and Pettis doing his cartwheel kicks and
yeah, I forgot he threw that too. Yeah.
Yeah, like it was wild.
It's the fence too, right? He was like, it wasn't like he just threw it out of nowhere. I think he was getting beat up when he threw that one.
Yeah, he threw that a couple times, so it was fun. So that one. I mean, people like the brawls and the quick knockouts and this and that, but
yeah,
I'm more of like a technical. Like you have to show me a few more, you know, tools in your arsenal. So yeah, I'm gonna have to go with Ferguson Pettis and all the bloodiness of it all too.
Yeah, it was definitely fun. And then you know, I think you had mentioned earlier him getting leg kicked and smiling and stuff too, but Pettis too, you know, sticking his tongue out with the blood running down his face, and like you could tell Pettis was having fun in there too up until they stopped it, you know. Like that's a sight to see, because it seems like the last couple of fights, especially when Pettis was getting beat up, like you just feel bad. Like you, like a good example I think is the Poirier fight when Pettis fought Poirier. Like that was back and forth and they went at it, but the last 2 rounds of that, you just you saw Pettis just like giving up, like, oh, I don't want to be here. You know, like you could see it was just tough for him. So for him to be reacting that way is like, well, he's doing it because he loves it again. Maybe something was missing, but he's definitely loving something about this fight.
Yeah, he definitely had a good dance partner. They both did, so.
Yeah, that counts for a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, so my pick for Fight of the Year is the rematch between Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero. I don't know if I've gone back. I have not watched it recently, and I don't know if I ever watched it after it happened. But I know seeing highlights, I remember how good it was, and I remember just watching it. It was rare. It was weird that I was so psyched. I was so amped. I was so emotional during the fight, everything of how it played out. But also I was watching it, and I'll be honest, I was drinking. I wasn't in the best state of mind, but I was still watching it with like a technical eye. And not even really because like I wanted to, like, oh, what are they doing? But it was like, it was at a pace where it was fun. It was filled with action. But it wasn't a brawl up until the third round when Romero landed that shot. You know, then after that, they kind of went crazy. But even then, Whittaker maintained his cool, did what he had to do. You know, he was throwing those front kicks. Whittaker has some of the most underrated front kicks, I think, in MMA period. He threw that head kick. I don't remember if it was the third or fourth round. The heart that Whittaker showed, and then he broke his hand again, unfortunately. You know, we're not going to see him till February, and pretty soon, I guess, in February now, but had to take a few months off after. I mean, he might have won Fight of the Year 2 years in a row, because I don't remember if there was a better fight in 2017 than him and Romero the first time. But the second fight was even better. And the craziest thing about here's what I love about that fight. It was nothing like the first fight. In fact, it was probably the complete opposite of the first fight. The first fight, nobody got dropped. Nobody got seriously hurt. It was just fun and technical and back and forth. A lot of grappling, a lot of defense. It was good. I loved what it was. But the second fight, Whittaker took the initiative. You know, he hurt him in the first fight with those kicks to the knee and had that, you know, he just came at him like a fucking demon, just with those kicks to his knee, like, motherfucker, you're gonna pay for what you did to me. Like, I that was the moment where I realized that I like Whittaker even more than I did. He had just that blackness in his soul somewhere, like he's vengeful. And I know that's probably not a good thing to say, not a good attribute for a fighter to have. You know, the common wisdom would say something like that, but that's worth a lot to me. There's times where you really need something like that, and that was the right time. And he, you know, he almost paid for it. He almost got knocked out, but he showed heart, and he still pulled it through. I don't know. I heard people say draw. I heard people say Romero won. I really need to go back and watch it and judge it for what it was. But part of me doesn't want to, because I enjoyed it so much for what it was, with the excitement, with how technical they were, how it turned into this crazy brawl. You know, the fact that Romero didn't get any takedowns again, and really didn't try for him, but a few times he didn't get anything. And he did nothing for two rounds, basically. And then, as always, third round, he turns it on. And then every point after that was just ridiculous. So, yeah, Romero versus Whittaker, it's my fight of the year. Easily the best middleweight fight ever. And may even go down in my top 10 as, if I had to make a list right now, I may be in my top 10 for best fights in MMA history.
That's awesome. Very good choice.
Yeah, I mean, I really was in awe of that fight. Like, the technique, the heart, all that stuff. But the fact that it wasn't just a continuation of their first fight, that they made so many adjustments, that they studied, you could tell they studied each other so hard. And even during the fight too, you saw like they both have, like, they kind of had like, it's a competitive thing, you know, they knew that they're equal, on equal footing of competition, but you kind of see that thing in their eyes, like, I'm gonna take you out, motherfucker. Like, they weren't friends at all, you know, like they didn't make it personal, but they really, it was about pride and honor and that type of thing, without it being about, you know, shit talking and, you know, getting others involved and stuff. But it was like the purest competition I've seen in a while between two guys like that. And I don't know what else I can say about it. It's just awesome all around. Love it. we'll always love it. Okay, so moving on from best fight, we still got a few. We're gonna talk about our favorite. Okay, this isn't best or favorites. We're just going with moment of 2018. And I know it's very broad. You may shake your head right now. What does that mean? So I'm thinking moment. It's very subjective. So it can be a fight. It can be a fighter. It can be some sound bite, some shit talking thing. It can be a scandal. It can be a news story. I ended up going with UFC 223. That was my moment of the year. The whole card, the buildup, all the news surrounding it, everything about that card was. That fight week was the most insane fight week I've ever experienced in my 10 years of watching fights. Tony Ferguson gets hurt. He tripped over wires and hurt his ACL on April Fool's Day. You know how hard that was to believe for anyone? He hurt himself on April Fool's Day. They get a week's notice replacement in Max Holloway. He was going to fight Khabib to try and become another champ. He's cutting weight. He had like 30 pounds to lose in a week. Cutting weight. We never found out where he was at, but they cut his, they stopped his weight cut. The doctor stopped the weight cut saying he couldn't continue. And then Showtime is supposed to fight Khabib, but, you know, and then the other thing of, I forget of something that happened in between that. Not just fight stuff. Conor McGregor decides to go on a rampage and throw dollies at buses and ends up getting like three fighters knocked off the card. Showtime was supposed to fight Chiesa, so he was there. Originally supposed to compete. Thinks Conor doesn't have an opponent. Thinks he's going to come up by fighting Khabib. He's going to come up with this giant fight, but negotiations with money and who knows what other things didn't allow that. Then Paul Felder steps up. That would have been an excellent fight, Felder versus Khabib. And then of all things, the commission says he's not ranked high enough. These bullshit UFC rankings actually matter for once. One of the most crucial moments ever. And then Ally Quinta, of all people, the guy that the UFC despises probably more than everybody, ends up getting the fight of his life on a day's notice. Man, that's absolute insanity. And then to top it off, I mean, to go in the actual card, that was Zabit versus Bochniak. That fight happened on that card. And then Rose Namajunas versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk happened on that card too. Like, that may be, I mentioned Irene Aldana versus Lucy Pudilova earlier. That is my women's fight of the year, but Joanna and Rose are a close second. I mean, that is legit one of the best women's fights maybe ever, definitely in the UFC. So that fight happened. That was a masterpiece. And then Khabib outpoints Ilia Quinta and leaves people hanging like, oh, Khabib's not that good because he couldn't finish this guy who's not a wrestler, who didn't really do much. But then as we see this weekend, Ilia Quinta beat Kevin Lee. So maybe there was no shame in that. Just that whole card, pure insanity. That's one of the biggest news stories that I remember in MMA in general. But biggest news story, biggest scandals, biggest shock, you know, biggest shockers. I can't think of a fight that had that much drama. So my moment of 2018 is the entire UFC 223 card from the buildup to the last bell of the event. What about you, Irene?
Damn, how do I follow that one? Oh, okay. So my moment of the year is Khabib dropping Conor in their fight.
And it continues with Khabib, so good segue.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was just thinking that, like, Pettis was on that car. Here we are talking about this one. Here's Khabib, McGregor. All the characters are, aligned in this car, kind of. But, yeah, that moment when he dropped, and it wasn't even one of the cleanest shots or anything, right? It was ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, he got caught with that shot.
And it was fast and it was hard. And yeah. When I say fast, I mean very fast.
Yeah, it was hard as fuck. He got dropped. Like, we had no idea that Khabib had it in him, right? So I think this is a significant moment for him and his team, Connor's team, because now Kavanaugh's thinking, like, what's going to happen after this? You got dropped, you know, you lost this fight. It's supposed to be kind of like your comeback, you know. Now it's, what are we going to do now? You have all this money. Do you really want to fight?
That punch may have literally changed Connor's career too. Yeah, obviously he didn't knock him out. It wasn't like, oh, like Pacquiao getting knocked out by Marquez, where you're like, oh shit, he may never be the same again. But like the shock that went over people's faces, like, that wasn't supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, luckily he didn't get knocked out, but it's like, in what universe was Khabib ever supposed to even honestly even touch Connor? Like, yeah, we knew he was gonna wrestle him and probably hit him on the ground a bunch of times. But the fact that he would even land a jab on Connor would be surprising, much less a wild winging. And that's the other thing. Yeah, like you said, it wasn't pretty. If he would have caught him with, like, you know, I know Khabib doesn't really, like, throw kicks like that, but, like, if he were just, like, put all his energy and focus, like, I'm just going to throw this giant head kick right now and catches him at the top of the head and he stumbles, like, it'd be shocking, but, you know, like, oh, he put it all into one shot. But he didn't even seem that intent on landing. It seemed like he kind of threw it kind of to, like, scare him off, kind of to, like, set him up. But it landed, and it landed hard. And, it, you know, that wasn't supposed to happen. I think a lot of people's opinions on Connor changed, that they, like, oh, he can be touched. You know, not just Nate Diaz, not just because he's bigger. Like, he can be touched by guys that are even smaller than him.
Yeah, so I think it's changing his future a little bit. Like, is it worth coming back now? And like you pointed out earlier, you're like, oh, check out his Twitter now. He's just talking about his whiskey and trying to sell that. He's not really even focused on doing anything else. So I wonder what's going to happen. You know, his coach is saying, let me know what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And it has to be something big or I'm not coming back.
And that brings up questions too of, is it pure as far as the coaching goes? Is it pure? Is it like, I care for you. If you're going to take a fight, make it a big one so it's worth it. Or is it coming from a place of selfishness of like, oh, I only want to help them when the pay is good. That way I can, you know, maybe line my pockets up a little bit more or get my name out there or get a little more recognition or whatever. Like, it's bringing up a lot of drama, honestly, you know?
Yeah. I wonder what's going to happen. I mean, he's been talking a lot, Coach Kavanaugh.
Yeah, that's a whole other can of worms with, and then, Owen Roddy, the striking coach of SBG, leaving too. He just left like a week or two ago. And he says he has no intent to come back either.
Yeah.
I guess Connor could hire him on his own and just keep him. When he left the gym, it's not like he has to not work with Connor. But another thing that someone pointed out, I noticed online, was that Connor's not really training anyway, which is, say what you want about Connor. He kind of strikes me as like that GSP type where like working out and training and martial arts are kind of like his therapy. Like he does it to keep himself sane. I know people talk shit about Connor and I get the hate, but I know he's a martial artist. Like he really does love fighting. And, I know that kind of may sound like, well, of course, that's his job. He should love fighting. But a lot of fighters don't. The same way that you go to work and you're doing it for a paycheck. And a lot of fighters are like that, too. They don't watch other people's fights. They don't go home and cash the pay-per-view. They're just, all I need to watch is my opponent. And sometimes not even that. And I'm just going to, you know, just hammer it out and do my work in the gym. And I don't want to know anything besides fighting, aside from when I'm fighting. So he really is that dedicated guy, at least in the past. That's what he's always seemed like. But now he's like, it looks like he's working out in his garage, you know, like he's just like hitting the bag and stuff. Like he's not doing anything of substance.
Yeah. Well, the latest from Coach Kavanaugh, because he's been talking a lot, is Connor never spends money. Everything's given to him. Cars, clothes, everything is given to him. So,
well, wait, isn't the word always been that he rents a lot? He rents suits and mink coats and Ferraris and shit. That's at least that's what he does over here, from what everyone speculates.
Well, I guess.
Who knows in Ireland?
Yeah, well, his coach is saying everything's given to him. So if somebody's always getting something, would you really work hard at this point? I mean, before he had to work hard. He was on welfare. His girl was working. Yeah. You know, he had to make ends meet somehow. So he stuck with fighting, even though there was some fear of getting brain damage and this and that. He still stuck with it. Now that he's made his millions and he continues to receive all these things, it's like, do you have it in you to even step in the cage again? So, I mean, it's interesting now that things have changed after this fight. Like, his coach is talking more, I mean, about personal stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so.
The other thing, too, with Conor is, obviously, we know he at least has, well, who knows how much he's gone through it. And if what you're saying is true about him giving him stuff, maybe he hasn't used a lot of it. But we know he at least in the past 12 months had $100 million in his bank account thanks to Mayweather. But we don't know, and I don't know if we'll ever will know, of how much money Conor made with this fight. Because at the very least of what we can gather, I know he's had to have a minimum of $10 million. And now that's being very, very kind. That's being very, very conservative about things. If last I heard, he was being paid for this fight partly as an owner of the UFC. Who knows what that means? Who knows how that works out? Obviously, he had proper 12 on the mat. And just in that alone, if we're talking about strictly money, how much money that's bringing him. I'll say this. I was looking for that a whole week. I ended up getting a bottle of proper 12. It was not easy to find. You know, we have a store here in a lot of the Southwest here in the U.S. called BevMo, which is a giant retail store sized liquor store, basically. And they can have every kind of whiskey and wine and beer you can think of. I couldn't find it. I went to 4 or 5 different locations around here. Nobody had it. I called obscure liquor shops, and I could not find it. By some miracle, I ended up finding it at some like Armenian supermarket. But that's been selling, and it's still hard to find. Two, three months after it came out, it's still hard to find. With the holiday season, you know, a lot of people are going to try and get it too. So if we're talking strictly money, he's definitely making it. But I'm wondering just how much he's making off of that card. He could have made 10, 12 million. He could have made 50. He could have made another 100 million. We don't know if he really is getting paid the way the UFC says. Like, who knows what that card generated, what cut he got off of it. Pay-per-view buys, obviously, you get the points. It was 2.4 million pay-per-view buys. It was the biggest, by far, the biggest UFC pay-per-view ever. So, who knows? I mean, yeah, that punch, as I said, his career, man, that punch may have literally changed Conor's life.
Yeah, I think he signed a 6-fight contract, right? And he just fought one.
I think so, yeah.
And he has 5 more to go, so it's what makes sense now after this fight. Are they going to go after the money fight, Nate Diaz fight, or GSP maybe? Because GSP had interest too, right? But Kavanaugh's thinking rematch with Khabib. That's also on the table. So
I think he said Khabib or Diaz were the main things that he thought of, that he was looking at.
Yeah.
That makes sense. He doesn't deserve a Khabib rematch. I think anyone that says that is extremely biased and out of their minds. They're not looking at anything fairly. But yeah. I don't know. That's a weird situation. Honestly, I mean, yeah, there's worse things to be in life than having multiple millions of dollars in your bank account and having the whole world know who you are. But Conor's definitely not in a great spot. Financially, obviously he is, but career-wise, especially if he's really serious about fighting, he's really got to think about some things. And I think the biggest dilemma to him is going to be, do I move? Do I switch camps or do I retire? Because as much as he loves money, as much as he loves fame and the whole thing, his love for Ireland is undeniable. And his love for his gym at least the way the gym was is undeniable. Maybe not Kavanaugh, maybe not, or who knows. But maybe it's also a thing of pride too. Like, hey, these guys built me up. I don't want to abandon them. So if I'm even thinking of this, maybe I should just call it a career. Because if these the guys were here with me since day one and they can't do it anymore, well, then maybe that's as much as I'm, that's as far as I'm meant to go or something.
Yeah. And more money, more problems, right? I mean,
oh, for sure.
He's even having like mistress issues, right? He's having all these girls on the side, right?
Allegedly, these are all rumors. And I'm not saying this just because like joking or that there's nothing that can be really, really proven. But I mean, he wouldn't be the first guy. He wouldn't be the first major athlete to go in Raw.
Mm-hmm.
I know friends of mine who have 5-6 kids who are unwilling to pull out just because it feels so good. When you have multiple millions of dollars, maybe it's not such a big deal to have a kid out of wedlock, to have a love child. But, man, I'll just say if it means anything, shame on Connor if that's true. And do better, man, because, yeah, that chick of yours is stuck by your side. And it's not like she's exactly bad looking either. So,
well, that was part of the whole story with him too, right? Just his lady by his side, you know, she worked so hard for him. So
she did, man. That's to me, like, look, I know people are like, well, that's personal business. You shouldn't care about relationships and what people are doing or not doing. But I don't care who it is. I mean, especially a woman, though. She's by your side when shit's rough. You know, that's what many people talk about. It's like, oh, well, women will always say that, you know, they're by your side, but if shit gets rough, they'll leave. Like, that's like the common idea, you know. Like, oh, no one's that loyal, but she was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's something. That's not nothing. That's something. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so 220. I had mentioned UFC 223. I guess yours. I don't know if it's a combination of just the punch that landed on Connor, or maybe just Khabib in general. It's not like he hasn't been making headlines, you know. After the, and then of course there was the brawl and a lot of things that have come up with Khabib lately. So
yeah, his comments.
And yeah, and then I mean, that's a lightweight division. I mean, you've mentioned Ferguson and, you know, Poirier and all. Like, man, there's a lot going on in that division. And then right now, who knows what's going to happen, because Conor and Khabib can both be suspended. They can, shit, maybe they lose their licenses in Nevada if they're really strict about it. It can get real serious if, you know, we can't just assume that everything's going to go well.
Yeah, if it's money, then they'll probably be lenient.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's the common, you know, that's what should happen, but
yeah,
that doesn't mean that it exactly will. But yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah. Okay, so we're running a bit long here, so we have one more thing. So with the holidays coming up, I think it's right that we ask old Saint Nick, old Mr. Santa Claus, for, you know, one gift. I have just one thing on my wish list. I want to see Khabib versus Ferguson. I don't care how shitty the cards in 2019 are. I don't care what happens with ESPN. I don't care if Conor comes back, if Nate Diaz. I don't care about any of that. I just want Khabib versus Ferguson. I'm even telling you this now, UFC. That card can be absolute shit. That card can have nothing but Contender Series guys and newcomers and fucking Elias Theodoru and Gian Villante. I don't give a fuck who's on that card. You can add nobodies there. You don't need to waste a lot of money. Just please make sure that Khabib and Ferguson make it, and please just let them fight. That's all I want. That's all I want for 2019. Please, Santa, give it to me. What about you, Reen?
My wish is for Chris Cyborg to be released from the UFC.
Wow. Win or lose?
I just want her to be able to be released so she can either try boxing or go to Bellator or maybe even ONE. But there isn't anything for her in the UFC. And there's no division, really. She's the only one.
Didn't have time to build it up.
Yeah, she's the only one still listed, and she's 33 years old. Yeah. You know, she tried with the UFC. You know, she finally got this fight after months of waiting. We're finally going to see this super fight. I hope she wins this fight, and then she gets released, so maybe she can try out boxing. You know, she's done the Muay Thai. She's done the MMA.
Yeah.
She's done grappling. Hopefully she can now, still in her prime, go and entertain, you know, boxing and make more money and just retire. Because what is she going to do in the UFC? I mean, do you see anything happening with the featherweight division next year? I don't.
No, I mean, okay, so on the card next week, so obviously she's fighting Nunes. If she loses, shit, I mean, if she loses, this might be even worse. Because who knows if Nunes is going to stay up there. And even if she does stay up there, who's she going to fight? Like, I don't see the incentive for Nunes to stay, even if she wins. I guess a rematch, but I mean, it is the last fight in her contract. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It seems likely and it seems possible that that can happen. But on that card, there's the only other featherweight fight, not counting the tough thing, because that doesn't really count. And this whole year and probably the whole history of this has been Megan Anderson versus Holly Holm. And now Megan Anderson is going to fight Kat Zingano, another bantamweight. And if Megan Anderson wins, I mean, I guess theoretically she could get a title shot, especially if it's impressive. But I have a feeling Kat's going to run her over. And this isn't me just because I love Kat. Like, I just think it's a bad style matchup. So Kat against Chris, is that going to sell? Is that? I love Kat Zingano. I love Kat Zingano maybe as much as you love Chris Cyborg, Rena, but I'm not an idiot. I know what's going to happen there.
Yeah. And
frankly, I don't want to see it. I mean, I really do love this cat. I don't want to see her severely hurt, but I know, yeah, because she has a chance. Of course she does. Everyone does. But she doesn't have a bigger chance than Yana Kunitskaya or Tanya Evinger. I'm realistic enough to admit that. Yeah. And I mean, Bellator may not have the greatest fighters, but at least they have fighters. She still hasn't fought Julia Budd, regardless of... I've had my issues with Cyborg, but I will say if she beats Julia Budd, I will not be the least bit sad because Julia Budd is the Ben Askren of women's MMA.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think they'll allow that, a crossover or, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, Bellator Ryzen, they're doing that, but I don't think Dana will allow that with Bellator. So, I mean, what is she going to do? Just sit on the shelf? And I think there's a champion clause, too. Like, if she wins this.
Yeah.
She's locked in. I forgot how many months, but how many fights, but
yeah,
she's obligated to stay. So,
and you know what? I don't want to walk on eggshells here, but I will address it. Also, USADA. I'm not saying this. Oh, I want her to go to Ryzen or whatever, so she could start roiding or something. I know that Cyborg has been clean for years because I don't think there's anyone who's been tested more than her. I don't have any doubts that she's competed clean since her failed drug test years back. But I'm really not saying this to be crude or to be an asshole of like, oh, well, she could start juicing and that. Like, no, she already kind of had that flub with the diet pill or whatever happened with that weight cut and the retroactive TUE. Like, what reason does USADA have to be friendly to her? She's already failed once, and you know how they can be with people who have already had a failed test. You know, like, she can go to another promotion where not just dealing with USADA as far as drug testing and stuff, but just that whole, I'm starting to think that there may be an issue with fighters leaving UFC. It's like, they need to know everywhere where you are. I'm not comfortable with that, and I'm not even fighting, you know?
Yeah.
Things like that can be an issue too, and like I said, not because of her history. It's like her history has something to do with it because they may be unfair to her, but just on general principles, like, do you really need that behind you? You know, other companies aren't going to care. They're definitely going to gloss over what had happened, and you know, even if they're just being fair about it, it's like, well, you've been clean for years now, So if we are going to drug test you, it's not going to be that comprehensive. So we could still have you be clean and make sure of it without knowing every single step you take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was dragged through the mud before she got in the UFC. Mm-hmm. She was dragged through the mud while in the UFC. Dana's been cool with her lately, which is great, but.
Because who else does he have left?
Right? She's endured so much. They know she's a draw, but again, there's no opponents. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, and Cyborg is...
What's the next super fight going to be?
Cyborg is rare, too, because she, you know, people say this with, like, Fedor, or they want to believe with Fedor that he's a draw, that, oh, you know, he's never fought in the UFC, but he always gets eyeballs. By hardcores, Cyborg, yeah, okay, Cyborg is maybe a hardcore... She's kind of a niche in that way too, but I know people who don't watch fighting, who really don't care too much about the UFC or fighting in general, but they know who Cyborg is and they will pay to see her fight. In the same way with like Connor, like, oh, I don't really care about the UFC. Oh, Connor's fighting? Oh, I'll get that. There's people like that with Cyborg. Like, you know better than anybody, Rain. Like, you know I'm not lying.
Yeah, she has like a cult following. I mean, she's been around for years.
Yes.
You know, she is that face of MMA. She fought Gina Carano in that fourth card. Like, one of the major fights that they had, main event.
Yeah. You know? That Carano fight, I'm sure, is still big in people's minds. Like, oh, yeah. Like, there's people who probably loved Carano who became Cyborg fans. You know, not many, but there's probably people who became Cyborg fans after she beat her. Like, wow, this girl's fucking good. She's real... violent, she's exciting, she's legit. And you know, I remember when Invicta had her, like, Invicta events were not Invicta events when Cyborg was fighting. It was something else.
Oh yeah, it was it's still a big deal when she fights.
Yeah, so you know? she doesn't, I don't think she needs the UFC, and she probably never has.
Yeah,
it just didn't hurt her, obviously, to join the UFC and get her name out there a little bit more, but she's always had her fan base.
Yeah, it's a real treat to watch her fight, especially now because she's not that brawler anymore. She's a technical fighter.
Yeah, even me, I that was my big thing. Even after I kind of let the steroid thing go and stuff, I was like, well, she doesn't do much for me because she's just some crazy brawler. But then I'm like, no, I can't deny the skills that she has, because you can see her thought process, you can see how she's working, you can see what she's doing, and it's all sound and it's all fluid, and I definitely give her props. She learns well. She's a good pupil.
Yeah,
she is a martial artist. She's not just this violent, you know, brute that I thought she was.
Yeah, and she's done other, you know, combat sports. So it's allow her to do boxing now. Can we just allow her to do that? Because there's nothing in the UFC for her.
And women's boxing is growing right now. I mean, they're, you know, I mean, even Heather Hardy got back into it for a minute, and you know, I don't know. I think I know a lot of people know of Clarissa Shields, and obviously Cyborg trains with her. But there's other badass girls right now. Breakhouse, Katie Taylor, and my favorite, Michaela Mayer. That girl's not getting almost any attention, and if people know her, it's probably just because they think she's pretty. But Michaela Mayer is way more than a pretty face. That girl's She's mean, she's aggressive, she's active, and she's technical. I love watching that girl fight. Like, I'm day by day becoming a bigger women's boxing fan, and having a girl like Cyborg can never hurt, because she does have skills, and she's definitely going to be exciting too. She's not just going to bring the fan base, she's going to bring excitement.
Yeah, so I hope, I don't know, with this feud with Dana White and Oscar De La Hoya, maybe he'll actually step into the boxing arena and maybe have like Zuffa boxing and put her on the pedestal. But when is that going to happen? 2019? 2020? 2021? What are we looking at?
It can be interesting too, because I mean, I guess they can always do something on UFC Fight Pass, but ESPN already has a deal, obviously, with Top Rank. You know, they have Terrence Crawford and Lomachenko and all these guys. So would that be in conflict with Top Rank to have another boxing promotion in ESPN, or would they just go the bypass route. And if they do, and if they have someone like Cyborg, or they start signing big name fighters, what's that going to do for Fight Pass, and what's that going to do for boxing and for the UFC? I mean, they can really change the game in more ways than one, big time.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get some answers after this fight coming up. We can talk more about it. But yeah, that's really my wish list, like, for her to move on to something bigger, because she's done all she can.
And that is what she wants too. You know, it's not just what you want. She's said that too, that that's what she wants.
Yep. So I'd be cool to see that. So I think it'll blow up too. I mean, if you have somebody like her,
yeah,
enter into that arena, it's going to be huge. So
like I said, not just a name, but exciting. So she can bring in new fans too. You know, you can, you know, someone like you who's a big fan is having it, and you have a friend who probably doesn't know much about it. It's like, oh, I like boxing. Well, yeah, well, check this girl out. She's going to fuck shit up right now. Watch. Yeah. Okay, Irene. Any other thoughts, questions?
No, that's it. I'm just excited for the last fight coming up, you know?
232.
Yes, sir. So.
Yeah, man. I mean, we went extra long on this one because it's end of 2018, and we got to cover quite a few topics. But I'm sure we're going to talk ad nauseum. Jones, Gustafson, Cyborg, Nunes. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And we're still trying to schedule guests. We have people in mind. We hope everything works out soon. You got a guest soon on here, maybe even next week. So keep your eyes open for that. But for right now, we just hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you've made it this long, I really appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter as always. iFoxWithJuice, Instagram, same. Me at Juice_MMA on Twitter and Instagram. Reen at FoxWithYa, Twitter and Instagram. Always, you can catch us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, basically anywhere you can find podcasts. We're basically there. So thank you for listening. Happy holidays, and wish you guys all the best. Cheers.
Cheers.